This is the Black and Blue Report presented by ABC Insurance Agencies, a better choice for insurance. Now from Studio B, or wherever the Saints or Pelicans might be, here's Sean Kelly.
Hi friends, welcome into the Black and Blue Report podcast. I'm Sean Kelly, and a very happy Monday to you here from Studio B at the Oshkosh Sports Performance Center. It is a victory Monday here at Saints headquarters after their 31-21 win over the Carolina Panthers yesterday at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And the Pelicans winners over the weekend will begin a new homestand tonight against the defending world champion Golden State Warriors. We've got a lot to talk about today. We'll do so with John DeShazer from NewOrleansSaints.com. We'll get his take and helmet stickers today from yesterday's win for the New Orleans Saints. And Jen Hill stops by from the NFL on Fox and Fox Sports New Orleans to talk about her assignment this weekend past and the start of the Pelicans' homestand tonight. That homestand will start without Anthony Davis, who's been ruled out for tonight's game. We'll hopefully know more about his injury that was suffered last Friday as this day progresses. Knock on wood, we're looking short-term here for Davis, but again, he will not be in the mix tonight against the Warriors. The Pelicans will have to rely on the committee that happened on Saturday night in Portland and filling his shoes. They did very well in getting that win in a split of this most recent road trip. Back to the Saints. Huge win yesterday. We talked about the hugeness of the game all last week. And not only did they get the huge win, they did it in a huge way, I thought. They won by 10. All three phases of the football had something to smile about at the end of the day. It really, really was an outstanding performance. And now they get ready for the Falcons on this short week. We'll talk more about that with J.D. here in just a moment. We just finished head coach Sean Payton's Monday morning conference call, and we usually don't share a whole lot of that with you on this podcast. We kind of let you consume that for your own on NewOrleansSaints.com or your Saints mobile app, but because of the short week, I do want to start our show off today with a couple of Sean Payton sound bites from today before we launch into our other conversations with John and Jen on today's show. So with that being said, two things that Coach talked about today I thought were of significance. There were several things, but two that I want to share with you. Number one was the big play yesterday on the opening drive of the football game in which the Saints went for it on 4th and 2. Alvin Kamara took the ball to the right side of the field, took a blast right at the goal line, powered through it, and scored the first touchdown of the day. Here's Coach Payton now reflecting on that decision and that play at that moment of the ball game yesterday.
Well, there's a couple things. I think early in a game, look, there's two thoughts that go into it. Do we feel like the percentages of scoring along with the percentages of what happens with Carolina having the football at the 1, 1.5, 2 coming out, and you start putting those numbers together, and what's the risk assessment? And part of it is setting a tone, though, and it's not every time we do that. We've done it a handful of times. I can think back over the years. Carolina before, I think we had a play versus Baltimore before. You know, early drive, first drive, 4th and goal at the 1, and, you know, you want to finish the correct way. And yet, listen, that, you know, you hope you're able to score, and if not, you put them on the 1-yard line or 2-yard line, and then you try to take advantage of that field position in the next possession.
All right. Of course, Alvin Kamara went on to have a fantastic day, as did Mark Ingram, and that duo right now is certainly a huge story here, but now across the NFL as well. In some ways, what we're seeing from Kamara and Mark Ingram right now are a reflection or, case in point here about why this Saints team is now sitting at 9 wins and atop the NFC South. Coach Payton talked about the dynamic of that duo and what it means or what it reflects in a much bigger way regarding the New Orleans Saints.
I think the versatility maybe is something that is unique, and yet look, as you mentioned that, we're getting ready to see a team that I think has two runners with similar versatility, and I mean that. You see them doing all the same things very well, but I think most important to me, is when I see guys excited genuinely for each other, regardless of whether it's their carry or their play or Coleman's block or someone else, then as soon as you start getting that on a team, guys caring more about the win and less about their own, then you begin to have a chance to have something. And I think, to your point, there is some similar versatility that creates less stress on me as a play caller. You know, where I'm not, I need this. You know, listen, we're fine. Both of these guys can handle most of what we're doing.
I didn't quite know how to get to that soundbite, but I hope that you got more from Coach there than you did from me trying to set it up. That's on me. Okay, so obviously the Saints win is something that we get to talk about today, and of course the start of the Pelicans homestand. We'll take our first break, and we'll begin our great Monday conversations today with John DeShazer right after this.
Now, Uber takes you couch to courtside at the tap of a button. Heading to a Pelicans game? Uber helps you pass on the parking and focus on the fun. And if you're still an Uber rookie, you can get $20 off your first ride with code PELICANS18. Uber, a proud partner of your New Orleans Pelicans.
What is big? Big is a ballin', shot-callin', gravity-defying offense and a lockdown defense. Big is you and your posse getting loud and proud. Big is an insatiable appetite for winning. Come see the Pelicans take on the reigning champs Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and the Golden State Warriors Monday, December 4th. Visit Pelicans.com for tickets. New Orleans Pelicans, do it big.
Welcome back to the Black and Blue Report. Here's Sean Kelly and John DeShazer.
John DeShazer's popped into Studio B. We continue here on the Black and Blue Report. Jen Hale still to come. JD, welcome back to the studio. And it's a much different Monday this time around for the New Orleans Saints and their fans than when you were here a week ago.
Well, back on the victory train.
Yeah.
Last Monday, I won't say depressing, but, you know, when you're in the 8-game winning streak, obviously people are not going to feel great about what had happened. And yet, when you reflect on it, you know, how many times in franchise history for any team do you win 8 straight? So you had to feel pretty encouraged. But the Saints had a big bounce-back game. I thought, actually, that they would play well against Carolina because, you know, not just because of the way they pretty much dominated them the first time, but Carolina didn't have Greg Olsen. They didn't have Charles Johnson, the defensive end, who got suspended. And so they were down a little bit. And plus, I think the Saints, you could hear it in the locker room last week, they were concerned, or their priority was to keep Cam Newton in the pocket. If he's going to beat us, he's going to have to be throwing. And they were pretty much true to that. You saw a lot of times where the pass rush was almost, I don't want to say non-existent, but they gave Cam Newton a lot of time because they wanted to make that pocket around him to force him to stay in the pocket and to force him to throw it, and it worked.
Yeah, there were times during the game yesterday, and we're kind of getting past the lead here, but you're right, Cam would be there, and I'd be like, God, he's got all day. Yeah. What is going on? Can we not get to this guy? Yeah. And then I started to say, yeah, but he can't run away.
Yeah.
He can't run away.
I think that was the main thing. They did not want him on the move because then you get receivers breaking routes and getting deep. And, you know, even though they had to cover a little bit longer, but I think they were pretty much true to that 4-man rush, maybe 5-man rush. Get everybody else back in coverage and say, hey, if he's going to beat us, it's going to be because he throws it. It won't be because he runs for, you know, 70 yards and a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, I'm a huge Dennis Allen fan, though, so I'm loving that.
Look, Dennis Allen is the assistant of the year in the NFL for anybody's money, considering considering this defense last year and the numbers that were put up against this defense last year, and really to have – I guess the new additions would be Marshawn Lattimore, A.J. Klein, Alex Okafor for the time he was in, Marcus Williams. But a lot of these, you know, several of these guys being draft picks. Dennis Allen has really gotten these guys in and said, okay, this is the way we want to do it. This is the way we're going to do it. And this is what we're going to roll with.
Yeah, Sheldon Rankin's in that club too.
Yeah.
Who we really never saw a full rookie season from. Yeah. So, yeah, all right, back to the, you know, kind of back to the meat and potatoes of this thing. JD, the opening drive, Alvin Kamara breaking through to get across the goal line on fourth down, I thought, well, this game's over.
Well, that's a message play.
Yeah, it's silly for me to say that early in the game. That's just naive and stupid.
I think that was a distinct message play. That was a we came here to not settle today play. Fourth and goal from the two on the first drive of the game. Now, that says we're here. We're not going to back into it. We're going to take it. We're going to take what we want. And if we don't get it here, we feel like we're going to get a stop, but we're going to get it here. Because, I mean, it's not like this was fourth and inches and Drew Brees could do a little Brees hop over the top. This was fourth and two, and you run a sweep, and Alvin Kamara's got – he ain't got resistance at the goal line. He's got a brick wall at the goal line, and he just ran through Shaq Thompson like – not like Shaq Thompson was his little brother, but like, you know, there was a payday on the other side of that goal line. And it was like – that was something – that I know Joel Thomas, the running backs coach, remember probably during OTAs and mini camp, and he said, you know, we like him, but we don't know how he's going to be when he sticks his nose into the briar patch. Well, he stuck his nose in the briar patch on that one, and he scuffed up the other dude. So that was an attitude play. I mean, that was a we came to win and we're not going to settle play.
Yeah, no. I think it just went a long way. Obviously, well, Carolina responded. I'll give them credit. They responded with a drive of their own, and then the game kind of took shape from there. JD, by no means was yesterday's game perfect, but there's a lot of things that you saw during the win streak that you saw yesterday that lead you to believe that we early on we said, is this for real? And then we said, yes, it's for real. I think now we have to start thinking about postseason possibilities with this football team and how viable they are come after the first of the year. Can we start to have that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I mean, they're 9-3. They're essentially two games up in the division. Even though Carolina's one game back in the loss column, the season series sweep by the Saints means Carolina would have to finish one game clear of the Saints ahead of them in order to win. So that's two games on them, basically. There's two games on the Falcons, two legit games on the Falcons. And these next two out of three against the Falcons are going to be, you know, huge and critical, obviously. But, yeah, the Saints can start thinking about that because of the way they play. And, I mean, the way they play is a brand of football that plays well anywhere, indoor, outdoor, wherever it is you go. You know, they run the ball. They play pretty good defense. You know, this ain't 85 Bears defense, but it's good enough for modern-day defense. They throw it efficiently enough. They don't, you know, have to throw it 45 times a game. But they're, you know, they're a really physical team. I remember the time when, obviously, back in the Super Bowl days and you know, those years surrounding that when the Saints were putting up astronomical offensive numbers and everybody was saying they were a finesse team. You know, they didn't win that much on the road and they couldn't win outside and they couldn't win in the cold. And, you know, even though they had numbers to say opposite of that, now the way they play is the type of football where you could win anywhere the way they play. They run the ball. They play really physical up front with offensive linemen. You know, you talk to them, and they love that because Teron Armstead said, look, pass blocking is hard. You know, you're retreating. You got a guy coming at full speed. He said it's hard. He said it's a lot easier to go forward than it is to go backward. And you see those guys, you know, yesterday against Carolina, yeah, Mark Ingram ripped off the 72-yarder, which contributed, obviously, to that healthy per-carry average. But that's one of those games where you got to keep chipping at it and keep chipping at it until you pop one. And they kept chipping at it, and they popped a few. Mark got his 70-plus yarder. Alvin Kamara got a couple more that they might not have been 70. But when you go against a defense like that and you get some 7s and some 8s and some 12s, it all starts to weigh on them because now all of a sudden, you know, Carolina came into that game giving away 83 yards rushing per game, and the Saints hit them for 60 more yards than that. That's got to, you know, that's going to bruise your pride a little bit because, you know, you're saying, okay, this is the best thing that we do, and they took the best thing that we do, and they shoved it down our throats basically. So, you know, for the Saints, it's a huge confidence boost because this is twice now that they've run the ball down Carolina's throats. They did it back at Bank of America Stadium too. So, again, if you can do that against a top 3-4 run defense in the league and you can do it twice, then you got to believe you can do it against anybody else, anywhere else.
Any weather else.
Yeah, any weather else.
Okay. By the way, the Ingram run was so pretty to watch. I mean, I can't wait to see Mark in the locker room this week.
Yeah, he twisted up, I think it was Micah Hyde, and he just twisted him up. It was nice the way he read it, and he, you know, he's going outside and Hyde, you know, closing in on him, and then he ducks back inside, and he ducks back outside and just twists him up, and then he stiff arms him and, you know, throws him away, and then he, you know, runs into another couple of guys. Mark's having the time of his life right now.
Yeah.
But Alvin Kamara is too. I mean, and I know we have reflected on this several times, but, you know, trading Adrian Peterson might have been one of the best things to happen to this team because it just opened up the carries and the touches for the two guys left.
Well, he was going to take those anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and then, yeah, we know how that would have
played
out.
I mean, because there was a point where, you know, the Saints really were trying to force the issue and include him, and it was, you know, the square peg, round hole kind of thing, and it just didn't fit.
Most NFL running backs are fast. Let's just say all NFL running backs are fast. I love how Ingram and Kamara, A, can take a hit, what they do with the hit, contact, and then, boy, seemingly both of them. And Mark's showing it now more than I've seen him in his career. Both change speeds, John, so well that I think it serves them in the open field, you know, to have these big chunk plays.
And that's the thing with the offense now. You can have either guy on the field, and a defense can't say, okay, well, he's just out there to catch passes. Well, he's just out there to run between the tackles. Well, he's just out there to – no, both of them can do almost the exact same thing. You know, so when you put them on the field – you're not losing anything where a defense can say, again, I'll reflect back when Adrian Peterson's on the field, you knew the Saints were probably going to run it. And they were probably going to run it with Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
But with Ingram and Kamara, you can put either out there to catch a screen. You can put either out there to catch a swing pass. Both are willing to run between the tackles. Both can run off tackle. Both can take a toss sweep. There are a lot of things you can do with either one. So you're not really – relegated to doing one thing, and a defense can't just say, you know, okay, well, by film study, we've seen this, and this is the tendency when he's on the field. No, it's not. Either one can do the other's job.
Yeah. A couple of special teams plays yesterday. We could talk about Taysom Hill, which they did for a long time on the broadcast, that's for sure. But with John DeShazer here from NewOrleansSaints.com, I still want to get to two things, and one of those, which is this Atlanta week. We'll do that in just a second, but instead of maybe kind of going down the list here, I know you do helmet stickers on NewOrleansSaints.com. Maybe that's the way to go here. What did you go with, and how did you arrive at your helmet stickers this week?
Well, I went with on offense, I went with Kamara for the obvious reason.
Yep.
and on defense, I went with Ken Crawley for, I thought, another obvious reason. Really sat out the last game with an abdominal injury, came back and had some really nice plays. On that 4th and 6 where he stops Devin Funchess, 4th and where he keeps him to 5 yards, and Ken Crawley's given up, I think, about 35 pounds to Devin Funchess, was a really nice play. And then he had a couple of pass breakups that were good. And on special teams, I went with Taysom Hill, the quarterback turned gunner and everything else on special teams. But also Chris Banjo, because anytime you force a turnover in special teams, that's huge. I mean, not that it's bigger than a turnover forced by a defense, but man, that's such a swing when you're talking about special teams that he caused that fumble that Craig Robertson recovered on special teams. When Carolina's in a desperation mode, they're down a couple touchdowns, and that let the Saints, you know, kick a field goal to kind of, you know, give them a bigger cushion, not necessarily, you know, swing the game and decide the game, but I just think it's huge, you know, when he was, you know, broke Carolina's momentum when they were trying to get back in it by forcing that fumble.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Atlanta, quick turnaround here. The schedule's different this week, obviously. You're going on the road, a little bit of a disadvantage here. Both the Falcons and the Saints played on this particular Sunday. Falcons were at home. This is the first of the two matchups that we're going to see in, what, a span of 14 days?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, or less.
Yeah, maybe 10 days.
Yeah.
About 10 days.
Okay, size up the week for me. What you think will be storylines from now until game time? And then, obviously, your thoughts on what would happen in Atlanta on Thursday night.
Well, you're not going to fool anybody. So both teams will probably just take these 3 days as rest days. Maybe some mental, you know, maybe a walkthrough, but mostly mental reps and film work. The Saints, I think, will have Teron Armstead healthy for this game. He was active on yesterday, but he didn't need to play because Andrews Pete played left tackle. But I think Teron Armstead will be closer to full health for the Thursday night game. I wouldn't be surprised if Marshawn Lattimore was not back out there. He went out pregame, gave it a whirl, didn't feel great, but a couple more days of rest and rehab might have him ready for the Thursday night game. I don't know about Ken Crawley. He said he was sore some last week, and I it wouldn't shock me if he can't go Thursday night because he really left a lot on the field on Sunday, and it's a quick turn, and when you're talking about an abdominal injury. I don't know about Marcus Williams with that groin. Again, he didn't work at all last week. But I think the Saints will be a bit healthier if you count bringing back Teron Armstead and if you count bringing back Marshawn Lattimore. Because, look, Marshawn Lattimore, as good as he's been this season, he's going to have to be better than that if he's going to be matched up against Julio Jones. Because Julio Jones ain't no joke. I know yesterday Minnesota shut him down, and I think a lot of times when a guy like Julio Jones gets shut down, I think that is as attributable to them not targeting him as much as it is to him not being available. Because, I mean, sometimes when Julio Jones is on the field, if he's even with a guy, you just got to throw it to him and say he's going to win that one for me. And I don't necessarily know if the Falcons did that yesterday, so it didn't look great. But hopefully Marshawn Lattimore is back to try to help deal with a guy like him.
Yeah, okay. What do we know about Atlanta's defense at this point? I haven't studied him a whole lot. That's on me.
I hadn't studied him a whole lot. I know they had a couple of DBs were banged up and didn't play yesterday, and they might have been holding their guys back for Thursday night's game because, you know, the Falcons are in a situation now where it's desperation. There's four games left. They're two games behind the Saints. They can clean up those two games by sweeping the Saints. Of course, they got to win in the interim also, but, you know, you make up a lot of ground if you're able to sweep the Saints. So, and first and foremost for every NFL team is to win your division. That's the automatic bid into the playoffs. I don't care if you're 6-10 or 10-6. You get in the playoffs and you get a home game. So the first order of business is to win your division. And the Falcons are in a position now where they're pretty desperate. They're 7-9 and they're 7-5, excuse me. And they're trying to catch up to the Saints. And the Saints have a bit of a cushion, and yet they can't feel comfortable. You know, not enough of that kind of cushion because they hadn't clinched the division. They hadn't done anything else. And if you're the Saints, your eyes are not just winning the division, but you want to go a little bit farther and say, okay, can we, you know, how can we squeeze into a one or a two seed where we can get a bye and really get healthy and have a home game? And then if something happens, maybe you host the NFC Championship game.
Well, Seattle helped a little bit last night.
Seattle
beating Philadelphia. Yeah. It may not be enough, but it's a start.
Well, the thing with the Saints problem is everybody they've lost to is a division leader. So
yeah,
and then that includes Minnesota, and that includes also the Rams. So any tiebreak situation, they lose because they don't have the head-to-head against
Correct.
Those teams. So they have to finish a game ahead of those two teams. So they're going to need a little bit of help down the stretch.
Desperate home team on Thursday night, fully confident visitors. I can't wait. I'm really, really excited about Thursday. We called it a big game going into this past weekend. Big win. There you go.
Big win.
Yeah,
big win.
John DeShazer from NewOrleansSaints.com. See you tonight, partner, over at the Smoothie King Center.
Yeah, let's see if the Pels can get two in a row and another improbable one. I'm really, really impressed with what they did at Portland with no Anthony Davis. And no Anthony Davis tonight.
Might have been their best win of the year.
I think easily. I mean, considering, you know, where they played and who they played and who they didn't have, I think easily.
No Anthony Davis again tonight. More on that in just a moment. Jen Hale slides in here for a little Monday night preview. She was in Green Bay yesterday. We'll talk about that too. Stay with us.
In 1907, Dixie Beer was a balanced, refreshing lager, brewed with love and top-quality ingredients. It would grow to become something that connected us, the neighborhood beer of every New Orleans neighborhood. And now, Dixie is back to that 1907 recipe, original and reinvented, just like its hometown. Visit DixieBeer.com to learn more, and always drink Dixie responsibly. Dixie Brewing Company, New Orleans, Louisiana.
The New Orleans Pelicans have the perfect way for you to do it big with your buds by scoring the Guys Night Out 6-Pack. Packages are available for select home games throughout the season.
and include two tickets and four beers, all for as low as $50. So do it big with the next Guys Night Out six-pack on Wednesday, December 6th against the Denver Nuggets. Visit Pelicans.com to plan your next Guys Night Out today.
It's Pelicans game day. This is the Black and Blue Report.
Welcome back. As promised, Jen Hill is kind enough to be with us on a very busy Monday for her. She gets started on a new homestand tonight. She's back in town after traversing through the Midwest and coming out of the cold yesterday. Jen, you were at Green Bay yesterday, weren't you, for Fox Sports?
I sure was. Always good to visit Lambeau. Always a special place.
Is it special in December, though? Really, be honest.
Yes, it is special in December, and I don't know if I necessarily mean that in a positive way.
Fair. You know, they always talk about the field is heated at Lambeau Field. That, of course, would help the sideline reporter too, right?
It most definitely would. This was not on yesterday, that's for sure. But it was such a good game. That really helped, Sean. You know, I'm a Gulf Coast girl, a New Orleans girl. I don't like the cold. But when the football action is that good, it certainly keeps your attention. The game went to overtime, tie game. Brent Hundley played great, and the Packers, you know, they needed that one to keep any hopes of a playoff run alive, and Aaron Rodgers returned. And it was fun because we got to watch Aaron Rodgers practice on Saturday. It was the first time he'd practiced since he had that collarbone injury, and his arm looks really good. It's not a matter of whether he's able to throw. It's really a matter of whether that collarbone can withstand a hit if he gets sacked. So he's eligible to come back in 2 weeks versus the Carolina Panthers, and it's really a bone density scan that's going to determine whether that happens.
You went right where I was going to lead you to, and that was that matchup with the Panthers, because this, in a way, does relate to the Saints in that Green Bay can help the Saints' cause with that game in 2 weeks. Jen, after seeing what you saw yesterday at Lambeau Field, and then, of course, having spent the weekend probably with a lot of Green Bay Packer personnel, do you gauge that they are highly confident that they'll go with Rodgers against Carolina, or that they're going to need some more time, or how do you read it after what you went through over the weekend?
I think Rodgers is definitely thinking he's going to go at Carolina. You know, there's been a lot of talk that if Green Bay can't make a playoff run, why bring him back? I think he's coming back regardless. He could not stand being on the sidelines yesterday and not playing. He was clapping along with the snap count, calling the calls for the officials before the officials did. Now, again, it really does come down to what the doctors say, because even though he's eligible in 2 weeks, he still has to be medically cleared. And you do not want to re-injure a bone in the same place twice, of course. That just, you never really heal the same when you injure it, when you double up on an injury. So that bone density scan is what the trainers and what the coaching staff is going to be looking for to determine whether they let him come back.
Jen Hill with us from the NFL on Fox. We're getting a little bonus here on the Black and Blue Report, as she had the Green Bay Packers yesterday at Lambeau Field. Jen, before we turn our attention to the Pelicans and the start of the homestand tonight, do you have another NFL on Fox assignment this week? And if so, does it impact the Saints in any way?
Actually, I do. I'm with the Packers again this weekend.
Oh, my. Okay.
We are heading to Cleveland.
Wait a
so
minute.
So I know. They're enjoying putting me in cold weather. I made somebody mad over there in L.A. at Fox.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll have a little more on the Green Bay situation, at least, for us later in the week.
Exactly. Yes. I can fill you in.
Okay. Golly. That's tough. Green Bay, then Cleveland. That's the cold weather tour right there. Hey, warm inside the Smoothie King Center all week. Four-game homestand begins tonight against the Golden State Warriors. You'll, of course, be on the broadcast with Joel Myers and David Wesley tonight. Jen, obviously the headline is no Anthony Davis, but where do we go from there with regard to talking about the Pelicans and how they start this homestand tonight?
You know, Sean, I was really proud of the team, the way that Boogie Cousins stepped up and Etuan Moore stepped up on this last road game. So they need to take advantage of, let's call it an opportunity, let's make it a silver lining, This team is better when there are shooters and other threats around AD and Boogie. So the Dante Cunninghams of the team, the Darius Millers, they need to use this opportunity to really find their stride. Next man up, get some experience, get some wins under their belt that they feel like they were responsible for. And we saw that they could do it because Portland, as you know, is no easy team. So hopefully this will allow some other people to shine and to get some confidence, because there's nothing like the confidence of having won, having done it yourself. So that's what I'm looking to see tonight. It's a tall task versus the Warriors, no doubt. But hopefully we'll see them get some valuable minutes and some valuable reps.
Very good, very good. You know, it's interesting, Jen, part of your broadcast role there with Fox Sports New Orleans is working with the assistant coaches. And here we are, a year removed from a much different start to the season. Jen, in your conversations with the Pelicans' assistant coaches, what do you sense is different here a year later and the way they feel about this team and their process right now?
You know, Sean, it's great when you're playing at the level the Pelicans are at in terms of where they are in positions. This time last year, they were just desperately trying to keep their head above water somehow. Now there's a lot more confidence, a little bit of a swagger, so to speak, especially on nights when Boogie and AD get hot, or let's say an Etuan or a Darius really steps up. When you're not playing necessarily for your life, you can it changes the attitude and tone of a locker room and a team, and winning makes everything better. That's for sure. So the assistants, I think there's definitely a more of a confidence, more of a peace in a way than there was last season. There's not the desperation. When you dig yourself into as deep of a hole as the Pelicans did last season, it's not fun and it's very stressful. I think now they can concentrate on those little fine points instead of just always being so anxious about the broader picture.
Good, that's very interesting. You know, speaking of interesting, I would be interested to know, Jen, as we start this homestand, what your wish list would be for players to interview this week.
Because I
may be getting ahead of myself a little bit, because I know that each night you make that decision based probably on what happened in the last game or whatnot. But if you had to sit down and make a wish list here on this Monday to start the homestand, who would be on that list?
Well, I'm going to wish for a Pelicans player after every game in the homestand, because on the court, you always interview the winning team. So if the Pelicans were not to win, then I would interview a Warriors player tonight, for example. Last time the Warriors were here at the Smoothie King Center, I interviewed Steph Curry. So I'm going to go with a Boogie Cousins tonight. That would be my wish list. And then Darius Miller has been so hot from the perimeter lately and stepped up so well. He's talk about playing with a confidence and a swagger. This is a different Darius Miller than we saw with his first tenure with the Pelicans. So I would love to interview him on the second game of this homestand on Wednesday. And let's go with Anthony Davis on Friday. Let's hope he's back and healthy and having been a major contributor.
Nice.
Leader on the team.
You're so right about Darius Miller. I almost am afraid to talk to him about it, because I guess I'm superstitious or something. I don't want to mess with it. But he's got such a different look about him. That confidence that you're talking about, do you think it was the time of getting away from the NBA, Jen, or is it a maturity thing? Have you been able to sit down with him and ask yet?
I think it's a little bit of a combination, Sean. Certainly the experience helped. I think he took what he learned in New Orleans and was able to apply it in a little bit different way when he was away from the team. And then maturity has definitely helped, time, growth. You know, he was a young guy when he was with the Pelicans. Also, Darius is a player, and I think I'm going to bet you're going to agree with me here. Darius, he's such a nice guy, such a good guy. He really benefits from having coaches believe in him and be positive around him. And Alvin Gentry is such a positive guy in that way. I think Alvin has been a good fit for Darius and a good mentor to help launch him. And help him have that success that a lot of us really believed he could have but didn't see the first time he was here in New Orleans.
Mm. Yes. You know, I get this question a lot, Jen, and I'm sure you do. You do too. You mentioned that you'd like to, you know, interview DeMarcus Cousins after what then would be a Pelicans win tonight. Do you get asked a lot about DeMarcus? You know, do you get that? What's he really like? I know that you've had a chance to visit with him now on several occasions. I'm curious as to what your impression of him was prior to working with him and what it is now that you, I guess, would want fans to know about one of the franchise's top talents.
You know, that's a great question, and it is the number one question I get whenever anyone finds out I cover the Pelicans. My impression of him certainly changed. He is an interesting man in the sense that it's really as if he has two personalities, one on the court and one off the court. And prior to him being a Pelican, I had never interviewed him. I'd never spent much time with him. So the only reputation I knew of was the one on the court, which, quite frankly, it's a bit of a bad boy reputation. But he is such a nice person off the court. That switch just flips. He remembers security guards' names. He says hello when he walks into the arena. The things he has done for charity, and he does it under the radar. His team, his public relations team, often gets very frustrated with him because he will not allow it to be a open to the media type thing. You know, he gave away turkeys for Thanksgiving, and he didn't want to go set up shop at a grocery store or somewhere near the Smoothie King Center. He went directly down to the ninth ward. He said, no, I want to go to where people need it the most, and I'm going to go to them. So he really has such a heart for others. And that's something that, I guess to his credit, it's great to see the humility that he's not doing it for press purposes. But on the other hand, I share his team's frustration that those stories don't get told as often as they should because he is so humble about that type of stuff.
Yeah, good take. I really appreciate you sharing that because I don't think it – I think you're right. I don't think it's shared enough. There's things that, you know, we can talk about that aren't real favorable, but there's so many things that obviously that many people don't know. He's a bit of a mystery, isn't he?
He is. He, like I said, he's very interesting. It's almost like dual personalities. When he steps on the court, the game face comes on, so to speak, and with that game face comes a lot of emotion, a lot of competitiveness, and sometimes it just comes out in the wrong way. And hey, sometimes he does not get the calls he deserves to get either, Sean.
Well, yes, we could do a whole nother podcast on that.
Yes, we could.
Boogie had 38 last time out. He will lead the Pelicans up against the Warriors tonight at the Smoothie King Center. 7 o'clock tip off. Coverage on Fox Sports New Orleans begins at 6:30 with our guest Jennifer Hale, who I'm sure will enjoy a much warmer assignment tonight and on Wednesday, Jen, won't you?
Yes, I'll be much more comfortable Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the Smoothie King Center than out on the football field. I was bundled so much, Sean, it was hard to move. I had on 6 layers.
Good call. I mean, Jen, you've been doing this a long time now. It wasn't your first cold weather run, right? I mean, I still remember electric socks somewhere along the way.
Yes, and I had them with me, and I did not have to use them. So it certainly was not as bad as I've experienced before. The worst was either Minnesota, back when they were building their new dome, so we were outside at the University of Minnesota, and it was probably 5 degrees. That or a Ravens game that snowed about 6 inches throughout the game.
Yes.
Those are the two worst.
Oh, my gosh. At Cleveland this weekend. First, though, we'll enjoy your work with the Pelicans indoors this week. Jen, thank you very much. Appreciate the time on a busy Monday for you, and we'll see you tonight on television.
Sounds great, Sean. Thanks for having me.
And here she goes, Jen Hale, Fox Sports New Orleans and the NFL on Fox. All right, we are a wrap on this Monday, a great Monday. Obviously, gosh, so much to talk about in a short amount of time, and that will be the case on Wednesday as well. That's our next Black and Blue Report. We'll be talking Pelicans, of course, with David Wesley on Wednesday. The homestand continues on Wednesday with a big game against the Denver Nuggets. And we'll be on the eve of Thursday Night Football. We'll effort to bring our old friend Wes Durham back from the Atlanta Falcons broadcast booth. I haven't asked him yet, so I'm kind of shaming him into it by doing it publicly here on this Monday. But I think we'll get Wes back. It'll be good to visit with him and get a real thorough preview of the Falcons and Saints game on Thursday Night Football. So, look, this is going to speed up really fast. Recover well today. Enjoy a victory Monday. I know the Saints are, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday. Go Pelicans. Big game tonight. We'll see how they do against the Warriors without Anthony Davis. Later today, probably not too long from now, and possibly before you take in our podcast, you'll have already heard the latest on his injury. Again, suffered this past Friday at Salt Lake City. We're crossing our fingers for something short term here, and I'm fairly certain that is the case. So, with that being said, for Daniel Salerson and for John DeShazer and Jen Hill today, I'm Sean Kelly. We'll see you later on tonight at the Smoothie King Center. Otherwise, next time right here on the Black and Blue Report.